All right, thank you for joining me, everyone. Charles Moskowitz here. My guest is Paul Begley. He's the co-author of Revelation 911, How the Book of Revelation Intersects with Today's Headlines. Revelation 911 offers hope and comfort through power, protection, and provisions of the Holy Spirit. We're going to be talking about the Book of Revelation and how it relates to today's news and developments. Paul, thanks for joining me today.
Charles, thank you so much for the invite. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, Paul, before we go into the issues, I want to talk about developments in the state of Israel and how it's impacting the world. As a Jew who just observed a Passover Seder, there's a lot of concern in my community and around my Seder table about developments at American colleges. Right here in Boston, where I am, we have Emerson, we've had Harvard, we have MIT, now we even have Tufts, which is actually a fairly conservative college. I'm surprised at Tufts. But it's part of a development occurring in the elite, Ivy League, ultra-liberal colleges in the East Coast, maybe eventually will spread nationally, with regard to students who are supporting Hamas and also now supporting Iran and Hezbollah. What do you make of this? Is this something that we ought to be concerned about as Jews and as Americans more fundamentally?
Well, yeah, this is nothing new. This is almost a replay of 1938. Mm-hmm. The language, the accusation that the by these extremists, I'll call them extremists. They say that they're protesting and they're saying they're using their freedom of speech, but it, really it's hate speech. And they're taking the position that we've seen in Nazi Germany when, the Jews were blamed for everything. They were basically right. Blamed for everything. And then, of course, there was this systematic, first of all, there's accusations. And then there becomes limiting freedoms, including their freedom of speech. And then there was the repossession of material bank accounts and material things. And you know the story in the night of the broken glass. Look, I've been to Israel 11 times, and some of my best friends are Orthodox Jews as well as Messianic Jews. I myself, I'm a wild Irishman, okay, so I'm a Gentile. I'm looking for a tree of righteousness if I can get one. But I can tell you that this same thing that's happening, we're sensing, we're seeing, needs to be shut down as quickly as possible. I've seen where President Biden said that, he doesn't like the protest, but then again, we do have to take a look at the plight of the Palestinians. So, you know, that's not the right kind of language. He needs to say, look, this has to stop. This is a hate speech. This is creating a riot mentality. It's infringing on the rights of the Jewish students to attend class. They pay 60 grand to go tuition in these Ivy Leagues, and I call it poison ivy. It's basically poison that is being allowed to run rampant. So I have high concerns. I'm very concerned about it. I don't want to see it become a national thing. I don't want to see this going on all summer because, Charles, I do believe that Israel is going to continue to try to eliminate Hamas, and they need to, and that's going to take several more months. So,
I mean, Israel is soldiering forward in terms of dealing with protecting the lives and the property of its own citizens, both Jew and non, by the way. As far as the protests go, it goes to a bigger problem, but I do give some blame, frankly, to my fellow Jews and to organizations like the ADL, which even though I totally support their support for the state of Israel, I think it's a mistake that they have made over this past number of years with regard to censoring opinion and knocking people off of the internet and knocking shows off of YouTube and Google and all the rest. Because they don't like their anti-Israel opinions. I think that those opinions need to go forward and be debated in the public square of opinion. Because I think if you're going to try to suppress opinion and use your power to do that, you're going to create a pressure cooker. You're going to create a volcanic attempt. You know, it's going to try to, like, it only adds fuel, which eventually leads to explosions. And so I do want to just say that I don't think that the answer is to suppress anybody. Let them have this speech. Now, if they're going to violate the law by threatening students or blocking people's access to classes, then they should be arrested. I mean, those are crimes. And they should be probably expelled, although I don't think these schools are going to expel anybody for financial reasons. You know, they don't want to lose the students. But they ought to take disciplinary steps on a case-by-case basis. But the actual speech and the protests, that can be done lawfully. I don't think that should be suppressed. And I don't think that the internet should be censoring people's opinions that they don't like. So that, I differ only in that regard. And I think that a lot of the problems that we're now seeing, the explosive nature of it, is because of that censorship, a certain degree. The other sense is that these people are just the same people. I've seen them. I've talked to them here in Boston, who came out for the pussy hat rallies, who came out after George Floyd's death, where they looted Black businesses and burned Black neighborhoods in what had to be described as an American Kristallnacht against the Black citizens. Probably they'll do another one against the Jews sometime this summer or fall. So it's the same rotten group of, you know, from a rotten vine, you know. What is it that Jesus of Nazareth said, right? A good tree does not bear rotten fruit in the Sermon on the Mount, and a rotten tree does not bear good fruit.
Right.
And this is from a rotten tree. Now, a lot of these people involved in it are what Vladimir Lenin referred to as useful idiots.
Right.
They're just going along because it's fashionable. They're going to get invited to the fun parties. They might get some good dates. You know, let's face it. I mean, it's cool. It's, you know, yeah. So you have that. They don't understand anything, you know, about these actual issues. They don't have anything particularly against Jews. They just don't understand it.
Right.
But underneath it are some very sinister and lethal forces that do understand what they're doing and that are well-financed and that are connected to, giving these schools a lot of money and a lot of, you know, stuff, money pouring in from Qatar and other places. And they have to be exposed and confronted. Paul, but I want to get into the substance of your book to Revelation 9:11, 9:11, how the book of Revelation intersects with today's headlines. There is this sense of impending crisis. I mean, I feel that, you know, that there's a sense that on the economic scale, the world has gone so into debt that there's going to be some kind of an implosion because it can't sustain this kind of overspending by governments. And that could be something that was predicted in Revelation, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In the 13th chapter of Revelation, you have the formation of a new kingdom. It's called a beast kingdom, which is basically communistic, if you will, taking the rights away from people. You would have to worship the ultimate leader, the ultimate dictator. You couldn't buy or sell unless you have the governmental mark. It's, you know, we call it the mark of the beast in the Bible, but be honest with you, it's some type of identification, whether it's a chip or it's a scan or it's something. But it's certainly, without it, you're out. You can't work. You can't rent an apartment. You can't buy anything in a store. There is no more cash to operate in. So, and Klaus Schwab, to be honest, with the World Economic Forum, this is the exact system he is promoting within global leaders. And I'm saying when he holds his economic forums, World Economic Forums, I mean, he brings in CEOs from some of the top industries, big pharma, big bank, big media, foreign ministers, senators, whoever, and they discuss about a one world currency system, which ultimately has to be ruled by a one world government. So it's not a conspiracy theory. I mean,
no, this is news. I mean,
this is really going on. And
this is conspiracy fact. I mean, it started out as a theory, but like so many other good conspiracy theories, they eventually are proven to be true.
Yep.
And it's already happening in communist China, of course, where you have people get a credit score based on their loyalty to the Communist Party. And if they're not, if they have a low social, what they call a social score, they don't get food. You can't leave your village. You can't go in a car. You can't do any, you know, you're restricted. You're almost under a state of house arrest. And I think that this is so obvious in terms of an emerging predictability of Book of Revelation. It's it almost happened, I believe, in 2001 with the COVID IDs and the attempt to digitize those and make it so that people would have to have a electronic card. That would not only prove that you've gotten the biological jab, but it could also, you know, have information on it about everything about you, your health, your credit, your banking, your, you know, everything you buy. Everything about you would be on that card. And it would be ultimately, I think that it's very, very likely it could be implanted as a chip into your hand. You know, this is something that's not at all far-fetched.
Right.
I think that there's one group of people that stopped it from happening, and that was the Canadian truckers. Thank God for Canada.
You're right.
Right? I mean, the Canadian truckers came out and they started blocking the highways and said, we're not going along with this. And they brought they threatened to bring the economy to a complete halt. And that was spreading all over the world. It was spreading to the United States, Australia, New Zealand, France, even Israel. People were starting to wake up. And the entire edifice of this world order, this informal, internationalist, illuminated, controlling, you know, quasi-governmental entity, they didn't want to have it exposed so quickly. And they can't function if the truckers are going to block the roads. So they backed down this time. I mean, here in Boston, we had our new mayor, Michelle Wu, coinciding. She just took office. She wanted to implement ID cards, vaccine ID cards, to go into a restaurant or a store. You would have to show the ID card. Nobody paid any attention to it in Boston. But she had to back down because of the truckers. So they had a huge impact. And what that shows is that it takes a small group of people that can step up and expose the nature of this order to set it back. And of course, they were attacked. They had their bank accounts impounded. They called them Nazis, putting aside the fact that most of these people are men of color. And it's, you have to kind of go up and take a swing and go to bat. And even if you strike out, you make enough of an impact that other people are going to wake up. Does this, in a sense, put back the course of the revelation?
Well, yes, it does. It doesn't. Look, we can slow things down, but we can't change the prophecy's ultimate conclusion.
Right.
But God knows that we will put up a resistance. As a matter of fact, he encourages us to put up a resistance because in that process, the truth is still being distributed. The truth becomes even more brighter when you're dealing with the darkness. And in our book, Revelation 9-11, we do just that. We expose these multiple areas, whether it be geopolitical, whether it be the mandates that we just went through, the loss of rights, children's being manipulated on, and parents losing their rights to protect their kids in the public school, whether it be through transgenderism or pornography among kindergartners or whatever. We expose the cancel culture. We deal with all of these areas that are really an assault on the family, on our freedoms, on our faith. We have to expose these. And so that's what we do. And we took Revelation, when you think of the 9/11 on New York, of course, in the year 2001, that was a wake-up call that there was a change in the world. The world order changed on that day. It has changed again since COVID. Mm. There's this massive push to eliminate people's individual rights, to discount the Constitution in the United States, and it's also going on in Europe and in Israel and all over the world. So, you know, you're dead on with what's taking place. And then the vortex of evil, we call this. You got the rise of Russia and its conflict with the European Union. You have China saying they're going to take back Taiwan.
Right.
You know, you have North Korea still hating South Korea. And then you've got, of course, Hamas, which is funded by Iran, and that whole scenario going on in the Middle East. So this is really a replay. We're watching a replay, different maybe players, different names, but a replay of World War II, but at a much greater cost because the weapons are not the same. The warfare is way more lethal, and the hatred seems to be as high or higher. So we want to expose all of that in this book, Revelation 9/11. I kind of say this is a sequel to Hal Lindsey's late great Planet Earth. Okay. Because he called so many things in advance.
Yeah.
And what he did, and I used to talk with Jack Van Impe all the time and Dr. Irvin Baxter and some of these guys, you know, and I said to them, you guys used to be on television when I was a kid telling us what was coming. I'm on television now and writing books, not about what's coming, but what's going on. Because what was coming is here, you know. So that's really, Charles, what we do in this book is expose the darkness, but also give solutions for mankind to still turn to God.
Indeed. And it does come down to a spiritual question. It's a, you know, it's what former communist Whitaker Chambers called the battle between God and man in his preface to his book, Witness. He had been a communist in the 1930s. He became a Christian. He was upset also at when Stalin, his master at the time, allied with Hitler to launch World War II. He saw that as a huge threat to his country, and he became a patriot. And he talked about the communist. The word communism could be replaced. I mean, it's the Babylon Empire.
There you go.
You know, it's the you know, the whore of Babylon.
Yep.
That it basically is the second oldest religion, the first being belief in the Lord God, King of the universe, and the Creator, and the giver of the law. The second being that that in the Garden of Eden, the serpent representing Satan tempted Eve and then Adam to partake of the forbidden fruit, which meant that they could replace God. They could create the great world empire and overthrow God in heaven and know all things. Of course, they were banished from the garden. And ever since then, in every generation, we've had this clique of people, I mean, who seem to coalesce, who come from different areas of industry, whether it be, you know, cultural, economic, political, and they conspire to overthrow God in heaven. You know, they conspire to create a world order. Except now we're dealing with powers that are unprecedented. I mean, that would have made the Nazis and the communists blush with envy, in terms of the ability to control people, to control what we know, what we see, what we think. And a lot of that comes into the area of artificial intelligence and its manipulation, control of the internet, which is now the main means of communication, and also transhumanism, which I think the transgender thing is just a small branch of that.
Right, I agree.
This idea that you can literally change human nature by manipulating who we are, you know, that there's no such thing as, you know, God created men and women in his image. And it does say women, too.
Right.
Right? I mean, Book of Genesis.
Yep.
God created men and women in his image. Did he create them? And this agenda of trying to control reality, trying to control morality, trying to control the world by this clique is now trying to rejigger that. They say there's no such thing as man and woman. And now it's shocking the speed in which this has happened. Now you cannot legally say that if someone declares themselves to be a man or a woman, you have to go along with that, and you can get in big trouble if you don't. And the horror of it is that they're targeting children, not adults, because children are, you know, a moral society protects the innocence of children because they know they don't have the developed intellect or emotional function or physical function to be able to be fully cognizant and rational. And so you protect children in a moral society. You don't use them as guinea pigs for this horrifying evil experiment where they are, you know, they're mutilating their sex organs. And it's so despicable. It's something that it would have been unthinkable even maybe 4 or 5 years ago. No one ever heard of this. And all of a sudden now you have big hospitals and mainstream and a huge money pouring in to conduct these heinous and rotten experiments, which would have made Mengele look like a, you know, Boy Scout in comparison.
Right. Well, Charles, you're dead on. I mean, the transhumanism doctrine, if you will, which is a part of it, is transgenderism, is to bring confusion. You know, we had Darwinism. Darwinism was the counter to creation.
Well, that was the nose under the camel's tent.
That's right. But now,
and they promoted that thing like it was no tomorrow.
Oh, we had the monkey trials, the scope.
Yeah, and plus, when he released that book in 1859, that became an international sensation. And then you had Huxley, H.R. Huxley, go around and debate ministers, and they would, unfortunately, they walked into the trap. But he would mock and degrade the Bible, the Torah.
Yep.
And, oh, this is crazy. You think this, you know. And it really was, you know, this belief that man is nothing but a bag of bones, that right, there's no soul, that everything is just evolving either up or down. And, of course, that leads to, you know, the Nazi crackpot theories, which is that some groups of people are more or less evolved than others.
Right. But there's also another, they've done another leap, and we put it in a book.
Mm-hmm.
So Darwinism was to get people away from the creation, as you said, and to mock God and to mock the followers of God. But after a while, when DNA, when it can't find the missing link,
right,
and DNA starts proving man, man's total makeup, you can't get around the DNA facts. So they created the UFO, the alien seeding. The ancient aliens are our creator. So it's not that it's not natural selection. It's not evolution or Darwinism. It's, you know, the aliens have come, and they're the ones that seeded us here. They're our creators, and we're screwing this thing up, and so they're coming back to fix us. There is no God. And so either way, you're saying there is no God. That you belong, you just either you evolved, or if that don't make sense, now we're going to bring the aliens. And so until we figure out a way to debunk that grand deception, then you got guys like Noah Harari, who's the right-hand man. I call him the false prophet of the Antichrist. If I was making a movie, Klaus Schwab is the Antichrist and Noah is the false prophet.
He's like John the Baptist to Noah. Right. Schwab's Jesus.
And he's preaching, you know, he wrote the book Sapien.
Yes.
And basically what he's trying to say is that we're going to evolve in this transhumanistic world with AI, that we are going to become a new transhuman, and that AI, and that religion's going to go away. I heard him say it. There'll be no religion.
Right.
There is no religion. It'll be a brand new Bible created by AI, and that will be, you know, religion won't come from Jerusalem. It don't come from Mecca. It don't come from Rome. It will come from Silicon Valley. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So we expose all this in the book. It's very important. Also, we get into the third temple, you know, the Antichrist, the red heifer, which is huge right now.
Right.
You know, and all of those kind of things. We want to be sure that we gave a broad worldview, and how it relates to today's headlines is coming right out of the pages of the Bible, so that people can understand where we are in God's timeline. Don't set no dates. But we just want, you know, one thing God told me long, I've been preaching for 40 years. The Lord said to me, don't try to figure out my timeline. Follow my sign line. Just follow the signs. That's what Jesus said. They asked him, can you tell us of a sign? He said, let me tell you. And he starts to go through it in Matthew 24, and it matches Revelation and Daniel. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, follow the signs. You'll know right where you are in the return of the Messiah. And so we try to pull that all together in this book.
Excellent. And, you know, as far as the business of promoting the idea of aliens, I understand that that came out of the Iron Mountain Report, which was published in the 1960s. The Hudson Institute allegedly, they had the secret meetings that went on for about a year or so, headed up by Harvard economist John Kenneth Galbraith, for, you know, who was involved. And what they came up with was, how do we create a world socialism? How do we create world order? And they came up with three theories that could create crisis, because these things can only be done in an atmosphere of crisis. That's how, like, the British Empire ruled the world for many centuries: divide and conquer, create crisis so that you can then manipulate, control, and be a small force. And they, the three things they came up with, the first one was global warming. People would be frightened that the world was burning to a crisp. Yep. They'd look up, oh, you know, the sky is falling, Chicken Little, right? You know, Henny Penny. The second was, I'm not sure what the second one was, actually. But the third one was aliens.
Yeah, the second one was the nuclear, fear of the nuclear, by the Russians,
nuclear bomb.
The nuclear bomb. So we've been two. We've gone through two.
We've gone through two, you know, duck and cover. But the alien one is now being promoted. And the idea that, and yeah, it's anti-God. It's certainly anti-creation.
Yep.
And it's just another one of these big hoaxes. And there's a huge effort, just like with global warming. You know, I'm not saying that that's a complete hoax. Maybe, you know, we should probably reduce air pollution. But the way it's being done, and the hysteria around it, and the way they're twisting and order, you know, rules and laws to suit this move toward a centralized world control, makes me very suspect. And it's also the very cornerstone of Schwab's World Economic Forum, except now it's been replaced by world so-called pandemics as a way to scare the hell out of everyone and make us all lock ourselves in the house and cover our faces.
We actually have a chapter in our book called The Green Religion.
Right.
First of all, chapter 5 is The Great Reset, and chapter 6 is The Green Religion, because they kind of just, they marry, okay? They kind of... Al Gore, you know, he invented the internet, and then he invented climate change, I guess. I don't know where he is now, but this whole concept that you're bringing in, this isn't, this is being pushed. I mean, there's more carbon and toxin that comes out of one volcanic eruption than 100 years of humanity's ability to create CO2.
Carbon is good.
It's good. Die.
When they talk about, like, what a greenhouse is, a greenhouse because they pump carbon into the greenhouse so the plants can grow better.
That's right.
You know, the plants absorb the carbon in photosynthesis, and then they emit oxygen. I mean, it's sort of it's a symbiotic relationship. So that, in a sense, the more carbon you have in the atmosphere, the greener the world is.
And this this war on fossil fuel is nothing more than a transfer of wealth. It's going from one group of people who control the oil and the coal and the entire industries and the cars and automobiles that all run off this fuel and all of our energy, trying to transfer that wealth to another industry of solar and wind, which will never get to the...
No. I mean, it's
never.
There are alternative energies. Solar and wind might play a role, although the electric cars, it's going to be a environmental disaster.
It's dead on arrival,
because
that's why Tesla's crashing right now.
Yeah, and also they don't work in hot and cold weather, but the what they're going to do eventually with those batteries are going to pollute the world. So it's one of these things that has unintended perhaps consequences for the environment. And then there are other things that they could do that they won't do, like harnessing the great slave lake in Canada, which is dumping a trillion gallons of water in the Arctic every day, and simply building some pipelines into the western part of the United States, which could irrigate. I mean, there are a lot of things that could be done, great projects that could improve the infrastructure of the world and improve life. But they
you're saying run water pipelines from the Great Lakes to help take care of the lack of the drought.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I mean, exactly. Just so easy. I mean,
and we're talking about diverting only a small percentage of that water into this parched region of the United States, but they won't do it. There's no will to do projects like that. There's opposition to it. So it just makes me feel very suspect with regard to their motives. Now, you talk about the business of the red heifer, which gets into a topic I need to bring up here. This is something that apparently there are two perfect red heifers that a small group in Israel has imported from Texas.
Yeah.
According to rumor, I don't know if that's true. And their idea is to sacrifice those red heifers on the Temple Mount as a way to begin the process of the Third Temple and ultimately the coming of the Messiah. Now, when the Messiah comes, this is an old Israel, this is a Jewish joke, okay? An Israeli joke. He is standing at the top of the Mount of Olives, and the Israelis send up a delegation to meet him. And the head of the delegation is there with his Israeli shirt, you know, pulled open. And he's like, "Welcome to our country. Thank you for coming. We're so honored by your presence. We've created a banquet for you at the King David Hotel. We all want to meet you. Everyone is there. We got the Pope is there. The well. But before I can I ask you just one question?" And Jesus says, "What is that, my friend? Is this your first visit or your return guest?" So we'll finally resolve.
We'll get that settled, won't we? We'll get that settled.
The book of what happens for Israel and what happens for the Jewish people?
Yeah, well, the red heifer, you're exactly right. The red heifers are in the stall. They are qualified. This hasn't happened, since 15 AD. So red heifers been, and burning of the ashes has happened 9 times in history. Okay, Elijah was the one that did the 7th one. Okay, Moses was involved with the first one. Right. So there's only been 9. And there's a prophecy even by one of the famous rabbis who prophesied in the year 1204 that when the 10th red heifer is sacrificed and the ashes are burned, that will be the year of the Messiah. Mm-hmm. So, 2,000 years go by. Here we are. They finally have a red heifers. They have the red heifers that qualify. It's time to do this. They really wanted to, and I can tell you, I've got friends in the Knesset that they were really wanted to do this during this Passover. They don't have to do it in the Passover because the lamb is the Passover. But they wanted to do it then and get it ready so that the next thing could be negotiation with the world on the right to build this temple. What do we got to do? But, of course, what happened is the radical Islamists, they know that the heifers were there. They caught wind of what the plan was, and they launched October 7th. It is all because of these red heifers that there's actually this war. And it's not the red heifer's fault. It's the fact that if they do this, now they've got all the religious ceremonies out of the way. The only thing left now is to build the temple. And, of course, the Palestinians still want their state. And so they've got to derail this plan. And they did. They launched it. They have derailed the plan, or at least postponed it and pushed it back. It won't stop it. Ultimately, it'll get done because we read in the Bible and we talk about that, the red heifer, the third temple, because after the red heifer's done and after the temple's built at some point, the Antichrist himself walks in and declares he's God. And that really opens the eyes of everybody. I mean, the Jews and everybody's going to say, whoa, 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 you're not God. You wouldn't come in. You wouldn't commit this abomination on top of the Ark of the Covenant and declare that you're God. And so those events are coming, and it could be sooner rather than later. But I can't and I've had people call me and beg me, tell me the timeline. And I'm still saying to them, watch the sign. When you hear that the red heifers have been sacrificed and they have the ashes ready, then know that the next step is building a third temple. But that may come after a war with Iran. That may come after a peace agreement signed by many nations. That may come after a two-state solution. I don't know. Okay, it could go either way.
It doesn't necessarily require the annihilation of Israel.
No, it does not. Matter of fact, it won't. It won't require that.
Because I think that, look, I mean, maybe I'm speaking here as a Jew, but I think that if you look at the prophecy in the Torah, and I'm not an expert by any means, but I've heard talk about this from people who study things like numerology and gematria, that the Torah specifically says that there will be a miracle in the Christian year 1948. And that was, of course, the founding
the birth of Israel. Right.
It's in the five books of Moses. Yep. And then again, 1967, the takeover of Jerusalem, the liberation. Yep. So these are steps in the direction of a messianic age.
Yes.
According to religious Jews. I would think that religious Muslims would be on board with this. I'm not talking about these radicals. You know, I'm talking about, you know, actual like Islamic thinkers. I don't know, maybe not.
Well, there is a group. No, you're right. There is a group of Muslims that say, we don't need to do this. We don't need to annihilate Israel and that the Al-Aqsa Mosque has to remain just simply for Islam. There's room. It's got 35 acres up there. There's room to build the third temple. There's room to build a Christian museum or church or whatever you want to do. There's enough room up there for everybody, to be honest.
They don't have to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Then. Don't have to. And okay. And I don't believe they will. And so I don't believe the mosque will be destroyed, and I don't believe Israel will be destroyed. Israel may give some of the land up. You know, that might happen, but... And they may have to do that just so they can build their temple. But no, the state of Israel will never be destroyed. It's been established. It was prophesied by Ezekiel in the dry bones. No. It's going nowhere. It's staying right there. Yet there's enough room if people would be willing to allow it. But
You know how. And I also would note that if you look at the Tanakh, which is accepted as canon in Christianity, and I think it's at least respected in Islamic texts, the first temple of Solomon was built as a partnership with Hiram of Tyre.
That's right.
Who was a Phoenician and who was, in a sense, a Canaanite.
Yep.
And Hiram Abiff, who was his architect and who was half Jewish and half Canaanite, who masterminded the actual building of the building. So it was a partnership. And also the second temple, it was built due to the Persian
king Cyrus,
who's referred to as a Messiah in the book of Ezra, and who issued an edict that's published in the book of Ezra, which is canon in Christian understanding, calling for the Israelites to go back, or the Judeans, to go back to their homeland and rebuild their temple. So the third temple, I would think, could also be built as a partnership with the Palestinians.
It could.
You know, I mean,
and that might be how it happens. You're exactly right. That may be exactly how it happens.
Yeah.
Once cooler heads prevail, and radical Islam has to be shoved in a corner so far that it no longer has a voice. But I think Netanyahu, whether you like him or whether you hate him, I think the guy understands that he can't just lay down and allow radical Islam to continue to fester and grow. He has to do something.
Has to be on the field of battle. Yeah.
It's a fascinating journey we're on, and in our book Revelation 9/11, we pull all those things out there for people. What I try to do is I try to bring all the facts, bring all the history, bring all the biblical ramification, and then you decide.
Yeah.
Okay. You decide. What does this mean?
You've created an extraordinary text here, and the book again is Revelation 9/11. 9/11. How the book of Revelation intersects with today's headlines. Paul, how do people get your book? What is the best way? Is there a website?
Way is to go to, it's ever sold wherever books are sold, but certainly just go to Amazon.com. It's real easy. Okay. It became a number one bestseller. It's been out 3 weeks. It's doing really well. And it's easy to get it there, and they ship it real quick. And so, but you can get it at Barnes and Noble or Books a Million or Target or Walmart, or you can go to my website even if you want to. So either way, it's all good. I would say go to Amazon.com, make it easy.
Okay. So Paul Begley, listen, I want to thank you for joining me. Really interesting conversation. And I really appreciate you, what you're doing, and keep on keeping on, as it were.
Charles, thank you. I'm honored to be on your show, and I'm so glad you've invited us. I really enjoyed our conversation. It's amazing when you can talk to folks who really understand what's going on in the world, and we're all hoping for peace.
And we all had better start understanding it. And
that's right.
Anyway, thanks a lot, Paul. Amen.
Amen. God bless.